We continue the 10th anniversary of the WTO protest with a segment on government repression and counterinsurgency techniques. I'm Ken Lucchini.
And I'm Maggie Starr. The significance of the 1999 Seattle N30 World Trade Organization protest is that the diverse social and economic justice groups came together and successfully stopped the meeting of an international corporate cartel, the WTO. The effectiveness of the protesters' organization caught local, state, and federal government officials by surprise.
In an attempt to regain control, local, state, and federal government officials came down with a heavy fist on the protesters during the N30 WTO meeting.
All right, these guys are still coming. Whoa! Yeah, again, a few more crazy explosives coming out. There's a blue one. Whoa! Heads up! Let's take this nice shot. An amazing amount of smoke coming out of that thing. Hands up! Okay. The kid who says don't panic does seem to have a point.
In an attempt to shift focus from the defeat at the WTO talks, the corporate media put a spin on the story and gave it a name, The Battle in Seattle. The corporate media focused on property damage that was caused by some of the protesters as justification for the use of violence by the government.
The battle in Seattle turns into a war. A peaceful protest that brought tens of thousands of WTO demonstrators through the streets turned into a night of mayhem and destruction.
Do not expect more of the same tomorrow. We are prepared for more of the same tomorrow.
Good evening. They are getting more tonight. Skirmishes between police and rioters are continuing.
There you can see it. There's a dumpster. The protesters set it on fire. In fact, they had three or four dumpsters dragged out in the middle of the street, set them on fire. Police came up to try to put the fires out.
The federal government's Clinton administration was caught with its pants down again and did not come out of this one smelling like a rose.
President Clinton is in Seattle tonight to talk up world trade. By the way, Mr. Clinton was the one to invite the WTO to meet in the U.S.
And I don't think anybody in America should take what a few violent people did as in any way representative of this community or of the people who are here for peaceful protest. Good.
Lawsuits were filed on behalf of the protesters beaten and arrested. 5 years later, those arrested and beaten won a class action lawsuit for having their constitutional and civil rights violated without due process of law. Since the Battle of Seattle, those in government felt they had lost control during the WTO protest were making sure they would never again lose control. But the story of government control over the populace began long before the Battle of Seattle.
In 1985, Ken Lawrence wrote The New State Repression, which gives insight into the government's strategy of using police state tactics to preserve its existing power structure. Strategy and tactics that initially appear pointless and ineffective for crime fighting and preserving public safety make perfect sense for tracking, infiltrating, disrupting, and controlling those who criticize or oppose government policies. For those concerned about democracy, it is paramount to understand the strategies and tactics of the corporate ruling class, which has used the government as a tool to try to take control of destiny of what is supposed to be a democratic nation.
Ken Lawrence says that political repression exists in three discernible forms: police brutality, vigilantism, and secret police activity. He says that governments utilize a strategy of permanent repression during periods of instability brought on by social, economic, and environmental conditions in an attempt to attain a calm and stable state. This socioeconomic environmental instability and fear, most recently caused by global cartels and governments' mismanagement of global corporations via deregulation, has resulted in economic, environmental, and humanitarian crises throughout the world. These crises are created by the transfer of funds from infrastructure to unending war profiteering. This results in the loss of national manufacturing capabilities, loss of jobs, loss of national health care, and loss of education, to a point where the operation and recovery of entire nations are in jeopardy. Individuals and groups that become proactive and express a need for change in the status quo of the business-as-usual routine are deemed to be insurgents and disruptive by the ones in control who actually cause the disruption. In a state of permanent change, there is a state of permanent unrest and a permanent state of repression by the government.
Frank Kitson, one of the commanders of the British counterinsurgency in Northern Ireland, used his experiences in the British-Irish War and the U.S. War in Vietnam to write one of the first modern books of counterinsurgency called Low Intensity Operations, Subversion, Insurgency, and Peacekeeping, published in 1971. In Low Intensity Operation, Kitson says that the law should be used just as another weapon in the government's arsenal, and that in this case it becomes a little more than a propaganda cover for the disposal of unwanted members of the public. He invokes the classic divide and conquer, offering a concession to certain elements of the protesting group, and when they accept it, demanding that they allow the government to use repression techniques against the others in order to return to normal. Another technique known in the U.S. as co-optation is when the government attempts to associate itself with many prominent members of the population, especially those who have engaged in nonviolent action. To stir things up, Kitson's recipe for counterinsurgency relies on a technique called pseudo-gangs or counter-gangs, known to those in the protest scene as agent provocateurs. Kitson goes on to say that it's important for those phony opposition movements to develop credibility so they can effectively confuse, divide, and undermine authentic operations, and so that they can eventually serve as paramilitary auxiliaries to the security forces.
In 1971, when the book was written, the main use of these infiltrators was in the counterintelligence program, or COINTELPRO, which was used to disrupt Black, Latino, and Native American movements for liberation. Ken Lucchini had a personal experience with this when, in 1983, a former U.S. lettered agency undercover agent told him about the surveillance and attempted arrest of a provocateur during the 1969 People's Park riots in Berkeley, California.
The former undercover agent told me that two agents followed someone he termed a troublemaker to a room on the second floor of the Durant Hotel to make an arrest. The agent knocked down the door, and as the door opened, all three agents rushed in. They said that they pulled our guns on the troublemaker and two of his buddies who were in the room and showed their IDs as federal agents. He said that after they showed the protesters their IDs, the protesters showed them theirs, and it turned out the troublemakers were actually agents for the FBI.
Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Between 1999 and 2009, there have been numerous acts and laws created by Congress and numerous presidential executive orders made and enacted to maintain government control over a population that is perceived to be increasingly out of control by the powers that be. In response to acts of terrorism perpetrated against U.S. civilians in 2001, the government stepped up its efforts by quickly passing emergency legislation, which they said was to combat threats from foreign governments, foreign nationals, and internal conspirators. Some of the enacted legislation includes the 2001 Patriot Act, the 2002 Homeland Security Act, the 2003 Domestic Security Enhancement Act, the 2004 Intelligence Reform Act, the 2004 Project BioShield Act, the 2004 U.S. Intelligence Reform Bill, the 2005 National Security Service, the 2005 National Clandestine Service, the 2005 USA Patriot and Terrorism Prevention Reauthorization Act, the 2006 USA Patriot Act, Additional Reauthorizing Amendments Act, the 2006 Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, and the 2007 Defense Authorization Act.
The far-reaching U.S. Patriot Act of 2001 eased requirements for domestic wiretapping and bank transaction surveillance. It also increased the size and power of the Immigration and Naturalization Service to allow for the indefinite detention of any alien whom the Attorney General believes may cause an act of terrorism, and modified the General Education Provision Act to allow the U.S. Attorney General or Assistant Attorney General to collect and retain educational records.
The 2002 Homeland Security Act created one of the largest bureaucracies in the history of the United States, called the Department of Homeland Security, DHS. It oversees, directs, and organizes all federal, state, and local public services under one agency.
Pretty soon I'm going to sign an important piece of legislation that will highlight our government's highest responsibility, and that's to protect the American people. The Department of Homeland Security plays a critical role in fulfilling this responsibility every day.
The 2003 Domestic Security Enhancement Act, also called the 2003 Patriot Act II, reinstated with some minor modifications the USA Patriot Act.
The 236-page Intelligence Reform Act created the Department of National Intelligence in 2004. It requires that each new U.S. citizen born be issued a Social Security number to be included on his birth certificate, along with his DNA biomarkers. The 2004 Project BioShield Act authorizes the secretaries of the DHS and the Department of Health and Human Services to take virtual control of the bodies of all American citizens during a national emergency, as they are considered potential vectors of disease.
In June 2005, President George W. Bush placed a portion of the FBI under his personal control, creating the National Security Service. That same year, President Bush created, by executive order, the National Clandestine Service.
In 2006, the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act became law, replacing the 1992 Animal Enterprise Protection Act. Using broad and vague language, the new law criminalized First Amendment activities advocating for animal rights, including peaceful protests, leafleting, undercover investigations of animal testing laboratories, whistleblowing, and boycotts. These legal acts are now crimes under the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act.
It took about 7 years to put in place this vast array of laws and severely limit freedom of speech, redefining it as domestic terrorism. The 2007 Defense Authorization Act made it legal for the president to direct troops to make war on U.S. citizens. And in July 2007, the U.S. Army headquarters published the 234-page Civil Affairs Tactics, Techniques, and Procedures Manual to instruct the Army on how to use counterterrorism and counterinsurgency techniques against protesters in the U.S. The manual was developed by military officers at the Special Warfare Center and School in Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
To quote directly from the U.S. Army's Civil Affairs Tactics, Techniques, and Procedures Manual, "This manual establishes the tactics, techniques, and procedures used by individuals, teams, and units of United States Army and United States Marine Corps Civil Affairs Forces, as well as planners of civil military operations and the strategic, operational, and tactical levels of war. The tactics, techniques, and procedures prescribed in this manual are used when engaging other government agencies, indigenous populations and institutions, intergovernmental organizations, non-governmental organizations, and other non-military entities in support of the conventional and special operations missions."
The manual goes on to detail some chilling information gathering tactics, including political, social, and economic data gathering, identifying key figures, figureheads, clerics, and experts in various subject matters associated with the operation of critical civil infrastructure, including water production, treatment, communications, electrical generation, transportation, and health services.
In 2008, less than a year after the Army's Civil Affairs Tactics, Techniques, and Procedures Manual was published, the Defense Authorization Act was used by President Bush to authorize the U.S. Army Northern Command, NORTHCOM, as the enforcement arm which could be used to wage war on U.S. citizens if required. The how-to plan, outlined in Civil Affairs Tactics, Techniques, and Procedures, requires an enforcement body to carry out the plans and an intelligent network to gather information for its operation.
A 2009 Department of National Intelligence lists over 60 intelligence gathering agencies and groups currently operating inside the United States. Now that the legislation and enforcement arms of the government are in place, they have a plan and are ready to go on orders from the President of the USA whenever the opportunity presents itself. But when will opportunity knock?
At each major protest since the 1999 Seattle protest against the WTO, counterinsurgency techniques have been applied more and more, with the line beginning to blur between military and law enforcement. At an April 2000 Washington, D.C. protest against the World Bank, there was a rounding up of protesters and arresting them en masse. A lawsuit was just settled last week that resulted in a payoff of $18,000 per protester who was arrested en masse in 2000. Protests at the Democratic and Republican National Conventions in 2000, in Los Angeles and Philadelphia, also both saw the tactic of preemptive mass arrest used by police and an increased use of infiltrators.
The 2003 protest in Miami against the free trade area of the Americas saw the city of Miami turned into a police state, with whole neighborhoods blocked off and jackbooted police in military garb riding through residential neighborhoods in armed personnel carriers, shooting off military-grade tear gas and concussion grenades at the demonstrators and neighborhood residents. More than 100 protesters were treated for injuries. 12 were hospitalized, and an estimated 250 were arrested. The Bush administration provided $8.5 million to back up the police against protesters.
In 2004, the Republican and Democratic conventions in New York and Boston also faced a militarized police state and preemptive mass arrests. In a 2004 protest against the G8 meeting in coastal Georgia saw a combined police and military force build up a massive arsenal of so-called non-lethal weapons against a small protest of less than 1,000 demonstrators, with over 10 law enforcement officers for every demonstrator present.
In March 2008, the Department of Homeland Security published a document that was circulated to law enforcement agencies before the start of the National Republican Convention in 2008, and it was leaked to the website WikiLeaks. The information about the Republican National Convention Welcoming Committee, RNC-WC, was gathered by the U.S. intelligence agency and is used as a justification for preemptive strikes against the National Republican Convention Welcoming Committee, which was a group formed to organize protest against the Republican Convention. The Department of Homeland Security publication said that the RNC Welcoming Committee planned to target transportation infrastructure in order to help accomplish their goal of shutting down the convention. To quote directly from a DHS publication, a basic social network analysis gathered from email internet protocol addresses shows the RNC Welcoming Committee's potentially high power centrality relative to other protest anarchist groups with similar intentions and reveals the collaboration and information sharing are likely prevalent. The protesters were not the only ones who were sharing information, as can be heard from this clip regarding a person who was detained before actually getting to the RNC.
Would not let us remove our computers from the vehicle for a commercial vehicle inspection. They would not allow us to remove any of our stuff except for my ID, and then they decided to let us take the animal.
I know that this bus has a lot of people on it that live on the bus, and they're being detained on this exit, Vandalia Cretan exit, going east in St. Paul. I know that I've been told by the state patrol that it was the Minneapolis police that stopped the bus. And I asked for the basis of the traffic stop, and they said I would have to call Minneapolis Police Department to find out the basis of the stop. So I inquired a little more. I said, so it seems kind of strange the Minneapolis police would actually stop someone in St. Paul. I said, you know, who is somebody else involved here, like the Department of Homeland Security? And they said, well, we're all kind of working together here.
Using the same type of counterinsurgency operations at other protests, preemptive arrests were made by law enforcement agencies, in addition to random mass arrests, detainment without just cause, and intimidation of local populations.
During the Pittsburgh G20 Economic Summit this September, counterinsurgency operations were raised to a higher level of intimidation and violence by the use of experimental, non-lethal weapons, including a sound weapon that local residents claim caused hearing damage in some who heard it. This was in addition to random covert kidnapping of individuals off the streets and general intimidation through the use of excessive force and lethal tactics.
I'm walking, I'm like, let me get out. They start cameraing, like, going all around us. I'm walking, police officer just shoves me with his nightstick. I start running, they're like, you're not moving quick enough. Takes me and beats me.
Okay, for your safety, get on the ground.
And now we're all being arrested for what?
That audio was from the streets of Pittsburgh during the protests at this year's G20 summit. This type of operation is conducted by law enforcement at the G20. And dozens of other protests over the past 10 years can be seen as a test of hardcore police state tactics. How much will the public tolerate, and for how long?
Many thanks to KBOO listeners and Jenka Soderberg for help making this WTO segment on government repression and counterinsurgency techniques possible.